Correcting, yeah. Ms. Martinez, are we correcting?
Good morning, Chairperson. Yes, we've got more than 6 members on the platform.
Okay, thank you. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, our support team from Parliament, DM, Honorable Kivit, Acting DG, Dr. Ramakopa, from ISA, and all the people that are part of the Portfolio Committee today, good morning. We have convened this meeting as the Portfolio Committee because, before that, Ms. Martini said, do you have any apologies other than the one that I've received of the Minister?
Yes, Chairperson. Good morning to yourself, honorable members, and my colleagues. First apology is that in case you hear background noise, I'm currently driving to, I'm posted in KZN with the ERCOM, the Joint Committee on Flood Disaster Relief and Recovery. But I'll be late to, in case I come in and out of the meeting, I really apologize in advance. The other apologies that we have is honorable Van Schalkwyk, who will be landing at 10 o'clock, so she'll only join the meeting thereafter. Honorable Van Staden is attending another committee meeting today. Honorable Batebula is also writing exams. He won't be able to join. The Minister of Public Works is also unable to join because she's attending a cabinet meeting. The DG as well is not able to attend the meeting. We also have an apology of our researcher, Ms. Inez Stephanie, but I see she's just logged in. And the committee assistant of this portfolio, who has the bereavement, is also unable to join in.
Thank you so much, Ms. Martinez.
My apologies.
Recording in progress.
I've noted yours.
Thank you so much.
So it means you will have to leave the meeting at some time so that you can board the flight. Thank you. Honorable members, DM and the team from Public Works and Infrastructure and ISA, we have convened this meeting, if I may read what we have requested from you.
Sir, where is you? Maybe it's network.
Honourable members?
Oh, you are back.
I lost you.
Yes.
God, I wonder what is the problem. As I was saying, we have requested a progress report on the review of the National Infrastructure Management Strategy and the report on the recent training of Infrastructure South Africa in the 5 case model and project development roadmap. That's what we have requested from the department. The reason we are doing this, DM, and your team from the department is that as the committee we are concerned about improving service delivery, and again we have a serious concern when it comes to the task of providing office space, courts, police stations, prison, and social infrastructure, which is at the heart of service delivery. And having Infrastructure South Africa, that is why we want a progress report because of those issues. And we know that Infrastructure South Africa is the driver on all the major infrastructure projects in our country. So we really want to know. And again, lastly, we, as the committee, we have resolved to hear. In fact, it's something that we have said several times, that we want to understand your program on the routine maintenance, not maintenance that is going to be done because we are reacting on something that has happened. And we believe that the National Infrastructure Management Strategy will assist in improving service delivery. With those words, I wanted to outline why we requested you and the report that you are going to be presenting to us today. With those few words, I welcome you all in the meeting, and also all those that are watching our meeting who are not part of the committee but are watching our meeting. We welcome you all. DM, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and a very good morning to your good self, to the honorable members of the committee and the support team of the committee, to the support from the department as led this morning by Professor Ramukhupa, as well as his support team. Let me greet everyone, even those watching YouTube and parliamentary channel. Let me greet everyone a good morning. And let me first start by appreciating this opportunity, Honorable Chairperson, to brief not only the committee, but the country, South Africa, on our strategy and our plan. As you correctly indicate, that you would, as members of parliament, understand the infrastructure space that we are operating in, and also you would want to assure the country that actually South Africa is hard at work in realizing its objectives as stated in by the president in SONA. Let me remind the honorable members that in SONA, that is the State of the Nation Address in 2020, President Ramaphosa kind of gave a directive and an instruction to this, to the country, to say move away from consumptive expenditure and look at productive activities, and redirected our focus on productive activities to infrastructure development and infrastructure spending. So we are hard at work as a department, since he also redirected the department from just being a public works department to also an infrastructure, to have an infrastructure focus as a department. And therefore, we started off with ensuring that we work on the infrastructure plan. And with that in mind, yes, we did have in the past what you would refer to as means, which directing us to was out of realizing that the programs that have been there on infrastructure development have not really yielded the desired I can safely say we didn't have an infrastructure plan in the past. We didn't have the pipeline, infrastructure and skills pipeline in the past. The systems that were there were more controlled by the public through the public funds, which is through Treasury. And now we have had to refocus, and we have had to reconfigure how we do our work. And therefore had to reintroduce new methodologies. And hence we now talk of the South Africa's infrastructure investment plan. We now talk of such a plan being targeted in terms of implementation, having a focus on short, medium, and long-term approaches, as well as, again, looking at putting the construction industry, which we all agree was kind of going in a negative way, going down. And now we have had to have the strategy on in terms of how we put it back to work, creating the so much needed employment opportunities. And therefore, we couldn't continue with the business as usual approach. We needed a different approach. But on the platform, I do have Professor Ramukhuba, who has worked with Nkosana and team in the department, as well as I also have Dr. Muemi, who's the acting DG, and between acting DG and Professor Ramukhuba, which I think it will be Professor Ramukhuba who will lead the presentation this morning, of course working together with Alec and team. They will present, and we will take questions and comments thereafter, Chair. But let me once again appreciate this opportunity that you've given us, and I hand over to Professor Ramukhuba.
Before he comes in, apologies, members and DM and all those that are in the meeting. I am the serious challenge of network, so I will try to not to open my video. I indicated that through the apologies that the acting DG is not part of the meeting, and as such I didn't acknowledge him, and I've been made aware that he's part of the meeting, so we formally acknowledge the acting DG, Mr. Muemi, who is part of the meeting. And also congratulations, I'm still saying Dr. Ramukhuba, that now he is professor. Congratulations, professor. We will no longer say now Dr. Ramukhuba. So with us as the head of ISA, we have Professor Ramukhuba. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much for the congratulatory remarks, and thank you very much to the DM for providing the context. Good morning to Honorable members, colleagues, and people who are watching online. The DG has asked that I lead this part of the presentation. As indicated, the DG, Dr. Muemi, has joined us. Honorable Chair and members, I think the Deputy Minister has succeeded in providing a very rich political context. I think it's important just to have a broader appreciation of if you like, the location of the infrastructure in the recovery effort of the country. The president did introduce the economic reconstruction and recovery plan as part of our overall response to the devastation of the pandemic. And one of the major drivers of the ERRP, as the president puts it, the infrastructure is a flywheel for recovery and transformation. So in an attempt, Honorable Chair members, to respond to the questions posed by the committee, we have segmented the presentation in two parts. The first one, we will reflect on the national infrastructure maintenance strategy. And I think the key here is the point that both the Chair and the DM have mentioned, in that the existing infrastructure is facing significant neglect, and as a result of that, is crumbling. And we know that the replacement costs are exponentially higher than the maintenance cost. So it's important that we introduce and maintain some degree of discipline in how we protect and preserve our assets. We are able to elongate their useful life so that we are able to reprioritize money instead of replacing existing assets, but we are able to attend to other pressing priorities in the country. And the Honorable Chair, and that part will be led by DDG, Mr. Kubeka. And then the second part, Chair and Honorable Ministers, is just to share with the committee just the reconfiguration of the public sector infrastructure ecosystem. There's an introduction of a method to evaluate and appraise projects, and this is an internationally recognized approach on how you do project preparation appraisal. It's called the 5-case model. It's used by the G20 countries. It is useful that we were able to embrace the kind of method that is recognized globally, because it makes it easier for us to access the big pool of liquidity that is available both domestically and internationally, and for international investors and institutional investors. They really want to have comfort that the methods that you are applying are methods that they are familiar with. So when we have conversations with the potential international financiers on our infrastructure project plan, the conversation is not about the accuracy and robustness of the method, but essentially it's about the quality of the projects that we are putting before them. So we will share with the committee how we are reconfiguring that space. Of course, there's a lot of it that is still remains to be resolved with the many players in the space, in particular National Treasury, but we have been holding, if you like, fortnightly discussions with National Treasury, led by our ministers, Minister Dilil, Minister Godongwane, and the minister in the presidency, just to ensure that we are able to reconcile the infrastructure ecosystem, and that we are able to live up to the expectation of creating a single pipeline of projects in the country. And I think the emerging consensus there is that the ESA must play that role, as envisaged in the infrastructure plan that the minister and DM did present and was adopted by cabinet going forward. So again, with your permission, Chair, just on the subject expert matters here, with your permission, Nkosana will lead the first part, and Ms. Masemola will then lead the second part, and we'll make ourselves available, Chair and committee, to respond to questions as a collective led by Dr. Mwen. Thanks, Chair, with your permission, Nkosana, I'm sure, will be able to lead us. Thanks.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, the Deputy Minister, the Acting DG and Prof. Ramakhupa, the Head of ESA, and all the colleagues on the platform. Chair, with your permission, if you could allow me to switch on the video, there's load shedding in around where I am, and so that I increase the network connectivity. Honorable members, I'm not sure who's going to be presenting, whether Secretariat is going to fly to the presentation. Or Leanne.
Can they give you the hosting rights so that you don't have a challenge, you just show us?
If I may request the chair to share, because I have a challenge with my network and the laptop in terms of the sharing. So if I can allow Leanne to just share for me, please.
Can you give Leanne the hosting rights? Is Leanne in the meeting?
Yes, Chairperson, she is in the meeting.
Okay.
So whilst Leanne is sharing, honourable members, the aim of the presentation, as the Deputy Minister and Prof indicated, we want to paint a picture of where the journey started in terms of the adoption of NIMS as the strategy for managing infrastructure in the country. To where, if you can go to slide number 3, introduction. Yes. So we want to paint the picture in terms of the journey of where NIMS started in 2006, and when it was launched in May of 2008, but also the journey towards how the movement from NIMS to the National Immovable Asset Management Framework, which was a component of NIMS, and how that then led to National Treasury developing and come up with what is known as the Framework for Infrastructure Delivery Management, Procurement Management, which is FITPIM, and how the alignment on what Prof raised on the bankability and the feasibility of major projects as part of portfolio management and also as part of project management as some of the processes that are outlined in the FITPIM. So when NIMS was then approved, the key focus areas was around one, strengthening the regulatory framework, right from planning, budgeting of the, and as well as the maintenance of the public infrastructure assets, assisting various institutions that deals with infrastructure with non-financial resources in respect of the maintenance of public infrastructure assets, and thirdly, developing a maintenance industry, because the country at the time realized that there's a need to develop the maintenance industry so that you have a maintenance corps and maintenance capabilities within the sector to be able to assist government and the state in maintaining the infrastructure. And the fourth key area was around how we're going to strengthen monitoring, evaluation, and reporting of maintenance of public infrastructure, so that we have a continuous improvement in terms of the infrastructure. So the Department of Public Works at the time was then tasked to lead the implementation of NIMS, supported by the CIDB, who was then to provide an overall program management of the rollout of NIMS. Next slide, please. So there was a realization in terms of the problem statement that all spheres of government, as well as SOEs, that are they have a major portfolio of assets that they are managing, and there was a strong evidence at the time that if you look at the infrastructure pre and post 1994, there was a poorly maintenance of the infrastructure. And some of the key challenges that undermine the maintenance included, at the time, the register of immovable assets was incomplete, and in some instances non-existent. But we have moved in terms of where we are now with the immovable asset register of the state. The focus was on providing new services and very little on maintenance. And even on those new services, because if you look at the life cycle asset management, as you start to plan for an asset, you need to infuse how you're going to be maintaining it from day one. Like, for an example, if you look at the in the car industry, when you buy a new motor vehicle, it comes automatically with a maintenance plan. So what has been happening here is that the state focused on new service delivery in terms of new infrastructure, but there was very little on the maintenance in terms of the planning. So all public entities did not have an asset management plan, because every asset, it should have a maintenance plan where you are looking at some of the critical components which come with the operations manual. So you need then to follow maintenance as dictated by manuals. And some of the maintenance are scheduled, they are periodical, so as dictated by those manuals. So most of the assets then did not have such plans. And also there were very limited budgets to often conduct the maintenance. And some of the budgets were not even ring-fenced. And every time there's a shortage of money, maintenance will be the first casualty in terms of shifting monies around. And the last factor was that there was an insufficient skill capacity both within the public and the private sector to undertake maintenance. Even now, we are not producing sufficient skills through our artisan programs and through our TVET, because that's where we should be putting an effort so that we have more artisans that are being produced. So these were some of the areas that were faced at the time. If we can move to the next slide. So from 2008 to 2011, then Public Works and CIDB agreed to take their names and say, we will then componentize the work that we're supposed to do within NIMS. And there was a steering committee and a reference group that started then to look at seven components from NIMS. Then those components were developed into what was then known as the National Immovable Asset Management Framework, which is the NIAM framework. Which was then overseen by the steering committee and the reference group, and Public Works was then the driver of that steering committee, supported by CIDB and the National Treasury. Next slide. So in terms of what the alignment then from those seven areas, there was a realization that we need not to move away from the immovable asset management policy, but we need to align with the life cycle asset management guidelines for both national as well as provincial custodians. So what has been happening? Develop what was known as the NIAM standard. From the standard, then we were going to clarify and define terminology and make sure that there's alignment in terms of processes across all entities. So members of the reference group then developed this particular standard as part of the broader asset management framework. Next slide. So from the framework and the standard, the focus was that in your management of a life cycle asset and the activities, the focus will be what is ring in, on the ring there on the operations and maintenance. And within the NIAM framework, then, as I've indicated, Chair and members, there was a development of a standard that formed the basis of the maintenance approach. And then we then had to develop what was known as the accounting framework, a monitoring and evaluation protocol, and creating some a competency framework where we would then focus on the required skills and required competencies, and then develop planning guidelines. And in this context, planning guidelines included the user asset management plans that are developed by the users, and the custodian asset management plan that is developed by the custodians. So this was then what was part of the NIAM framework. But the other element, Chair and members, that was added was the contractor development through the maintenance industry, because we realized at the time that we need to focus on making sure that we develop contractors that will focus on maintenance. That is why now you have within the industry some of the players that have developed and positioned themselves as maintenance service providers, and they're providing total facilities options in terms of the management of the portfolio of maintenance. Next slide. So as I've indicated, Chair, we then published the six framework documents, which were hosted by CIDB for all the provincial and the national departments to access, which were defining the standard, the accounting framework, the monitoring and evaluation protocol, the NIAM planning guidelines, the competency framework, and the contractor development within the maintenance industry. And we're showing in that slide some of these examples of the booklets that were printed, and they were distributed to various infrastructure departments, both nationally and provincially, in terms of how they could then utilize these elements of the framework. Next slide. So as we were busy with this process of the NIAM framework, National Treasury then in 2018 adopted what is known as in 2016 rather, what is known as the Standard for Infrastructure Procurement and Delivery Management System. And within that system, it was direct all infrastructure department were directed to follow a particular planning, budgeting, implementation, and monitoring framework, including maintenance. But there was no alignment of the SITPIM with the NIAM framework. This resulted then that in 2018, there was a working group of National Treasury, the Department of Public Works, provinces, CIDB, which then led to a consultative process to review the SITPIM. And then in 2019, National Treasury then gazetted or gave a guideline in terms of the instruction note number 3 of 2019, which then became the framework for infrastructure delivery and procurement management, which then prescribed what will be the minimum requirements for effective governance of infrastructure and procurement management. And in a way, Chairperson and members, aligning then the life cycle asset management right from planning to design, to implementation, to maintenance, and then up to the disposal of the particular asset. Next slide. So as I've indicated, what then the FIDPIM does, it then prescribes how the IDMS, which was at the time a preferred infrastructure methodology, but what the FIDPIM then did, it then made sure that the IDMS is implemented by all infrastructure departments, and within that there would be four key delivery processes. First one being the portfolio process management program as the second one, the third one being project management, and the third one being operations and maintenance. And it then created infrastructure procurement gates and delivery gates in terms of who must be delivering a particular gate. And this was to be effective from 1 October 2019. What we then did as the National Department of Public Works and Infrastructure in 2019, we then started developing the standard operating procedures aligned to FIDPIM, and those standard operating procedures we then shared with the provincial public works and infrastructure through our technical MINMEC, and our MINMEC also endorsed and the presentation that of the standard operating procedures, and noting that the mandate is concurrent, we then had to make sure that provinces also align some of their processes with those standard operating procedures. So as part of the alignment then, we within the portfolio process, Mameti is going to talk to now, Chair, ISA then as a single entry point of projects, they then look at a large scale, high impact and complex projects, which are above 1 billion, either projects or programs at a portfolio level. They would then make sure that there's proper feasibility, the projects are bankable as part of the planning. And when the project then is ready for delivery, they then use the 5-case model at the project management level to then say how the project will be implemented from early business case using the 5-case model into the bankability of the project. And in the next slide, we are showing those processes in the FIDPIM to say at portfolio process, this is where we then link the planning work that ISA does at the high level, but at the project process stage, when the actual project now is looked at the pre-feasibility and the feasibility, and Mamesi will take the members through, then how the 5-case model link with project management. I think I can then, in the next slide, hand over to I've already spoken to this slide in my presentation. Next slide. So, with your permission, Chairperson, I will then allow DDG Masimula, as directed by Prof. Ramakupa, to then take us through the ISA process in terms of the bankability and the 5-case model. With your permission, Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG Nkosana. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DM Kivit, DG Dr. Mwemi, Prof. Ramakopa, Head of Infrastructure South Africa, honorable members and team from DPWI that are joining us this morning for this presentation. Chair, I was just putting on my video so you can see that it's not a robot that's speaking behind the microphone, but that is the live person. So for now, I'm going to save the bandwidth and switch it off, and then we can kick off with the presentation. We are starting the presentation on the five case model, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, to do a quick recap on what the process flow looks like and what are some of these governance structures that are currently in place within Infrastructure South Africa to ensure that we are enhancing the quality of the project preparation process for this national portfolio of infrastructure investment projects and programs, and also adding on the issues around the visibility of the project pipeline, as well as showing the accountability components to it. So as Prof. Ramakopa spoke, ESA itself is a single point of entry for all infrastructure projects that require direct fiscal support, meaning that direct fiscal allocation, as well as indirect support, indirect fiscal support through credit enhancement facilities. Those projects, as per the Cabinet Directive, must come through the window of ESA so that they are well prepared, they are packaged in line with the five-case model, which we'll talk to in the next slide. Because this five-case model allows us to conduct very detailed analysis and optioneering exercises based on data, based on the different models that we apply, economic models, et cetera, to come up with projects or business cases that are robust, business cases that will allow funding and financing decisions to be made for these major infrastructure programs of government. So we do assess, as these projects come through from national government departments, provincial government, municipalities, state-owned entities, as well as private sector projects, and they come through the window of ESA, we will look at these projects applying the lens of the National Infrastructure Plan, for instance, just to ensure that these programs or these projects and programs, one, are going to have high impact, they are aligned with the strategic development goals of the country, they also help us achieve the targets that are set out in the National Infrastructure Plan, the presidency's country investment strategy, as well as other national sectoral policies. So we use this five-case model and have designed, we have the different stage gates and approval processes to make sure that, as mentioned earlier, that we are enhancing the quality of these business cases, working very closely with the project owners and project sponsors, especially those in the public sector. In the case of private sector projects, in the main, these projects, the financing component would have been, is not an issue. However, they would require unblocking in terms of government authorizations, approvals that are required to enable this project to be rolled out and to be implemented. So that's the type of support that we then provide for private sector infrastructure projects. But for the public sector ones, in most cases, these projects are not, they do not have the funding and therefore we must take them through the this methodology and the different stage gates of approval to make sure that, or what we call the lines of defense, to make sure that by the time the funding decisions and financing decisions are made, that these projects are well prepared and packaged. So from a governance perspective, as they come through, if you look in the middle there, the dotted blocks, they come through the website of ESA. They are then submitted through to the portfolio management office. There's a team in ESA that will look at whether these projects, just at the high level, are they complying with the eligibility or admissions criteria? You know, are they projects over the 1 billion rand mark, for example, the right sectors and so on and so forth? Once that is done, what that high-level assessment to check that they comply with that admissions criteria, those projects get to be submitted to the various technical working groups. And here is where that whole of government approach comes through, as well as ability for us to tap into the expertise of and the skill set of private sector technical experts that sit in those technical working groups. We are supported by line function departments or policy mandate departments. So if it's energy projects, we've got the DDG or chief director from DMRE sits there. If it's human settlements, we've got the DDG or chief director that from Department of Human Settlements. They look at the policy lens, the legislation lens in relation to those projects. Then you've got the technical teams that do from local DFIs, IDC, we're supported by DBSA, the PIC, for example, as well as multilateral development banks such as the World Bank, the European Investment Bank, your African Development Bank, New Development Bank, et cetera, sit in those technical working groups, helping with developing these business cases in line with the five-case methodology. Once that second line of defense has, those projects have gone through that second line of defense, they get to be submitted to the Infrastructure Investment Review Committee. This committee is chaired by the head of ESA, Professor Ramakopa. It also has sits in the National Treasury, the Department of DPME sits there. The two private sector representatives are also sitting there, as well as the DDGs and program managers in Infrastructure South Africa. Then these projects get to be submitted to the Infrastructure and Investment Committee that is chaired by Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. And there again, the DGs of National Treasury, DPE, Public Enterprises, DPME, DTIC, the CEO of SALGA, CEO of MISA also sit, as well as private sector represented, also sit in that committee. And then the approvals are made in relation to these projects. So once they are approved, these projects would have been such that the funding decisions are ready to be made. And they will be, typically they will fall into three buckets or three funding pathways. There will be projects that will be commercially viable, meaning that although they are private sector, public sector infrastructure projects or programs, they are such that they do not require fiscal injection. And so Infrastructure South Africa will work with the project sponsor to go out to the market to raise funding for those projects. And then there will be a second category of those projects that are for blended finance or PPPs. These are projects that will then be handed over to the infrastructure fund. The infrastructure fund will apply their blended finance mandate and ensure that they are leveraging private sector capital with a small amount of money from the fiscus to help fund those projects. And then there will be those projects that have got no revenue prospects of revenue generation. So those will be projects that we categorize them as pure fiscus projects. And those will be the projects that National Treasury will then allocate funding to depending on the size of the envelope, etc., etc. Essentially, they'll all follow a budget process. Once the funding has been is made available, procurement has taken place, the asset is being delivered on the ground, Infrastructure South Africa will also assist project sponsors where required with infrastructure delivery, the delivery of that particular infrastructure asset. And also from the ISA Center of Excellence perspective, we do measure the benefits that will accrue from the delivery of that asset. As in now, we validate the contribution of that infrastructure investment program in terms of its contribution to GDP, to contribution to special inclusivity or special transformation, job creation, etc. So we'll be doing providing and publishing these type of reports in the next year or two, because it takes a while to deliver these assets. But that benefit realization mechanism is part of ensuring that the infrastructure pipeline does contribute to strategic national or socioeconomic goals of the country. So if we go to the next slide. So the next slide, Honorable Chair and members, this one speaks to the five-case model, because we've been asked to update the committee on the training or around the five-case model and what has transpired. Prof. Ramokopa, in his introductory remarks, talked about the five-case model being internationally being an international best practice in preparing and packaging projects. We've been fortunate to have received funding through the UK government, coordinated by the British High Commission in the country, to roll out this five-case model to all Infrastructure South Africa officials, Infrastructure Fund officials, certain FOE such as TCTA, Sunrail, Transnet, and they've all participated in this program. National, other national government departments, as well as provincial and municipal government officials that are involved in the infrastructure ecosystem. So all in all, we over about 139 officials have been trained on this five-case model, as well as additional 15 on the project development roadmap. That one, it was more testing the application of those principles on a live project in the country. So there are learnings that have been derived from that pilot phase. In the next round of rolling out the five-case model in the next financial year, that project development roadmap, PDR, is going to be very much part and parcel of the entire five-case model as we roll it out even more, ensuring that as many officials as possible, both in government, in public entities, SOEs, we start to embed and institutionalize this way of packaging and preparing infrastructure projects such that they are of quality, that these projects, they drive economic growth, they are able to attract significant private sector participation and investment, as DM has said, and also ensuring that these projects contribute to meeting the goals and government strategic objectives overall. So the five-case model essentially is called the five-case because the business case for each project, infrastructure project or program, will have five elements to it. So those five elements are the strategic case. So the strategic case essentially is asking the question, to what extent is this a project to the policy, to national policies or strategies, what are the objectives of this project, etc. So on the economic case, we are asking the question, is the project economically and socially desirable? and what is the opportunity cost. So that's where we conduct, that's where we put a lot of effort from the ESA perspective, the assisting project sponsors and owners with conducting a cost-benefit analysis. So that economic case essentially rests on that modeling exercise that we assist project sponsors and owners with. And then there's a commercial case because it's important that before the procurement takes place, etc., that the commercial case is robust, meaning that we can demonstrate very clearly that from a supply side perspective, we're able to deliver on the requirements. And we have a detailed procurement strategy, the proposed contract structure is in place, the allocation of risk is done correctly, etc. So that commercial case, as well as the financial case, around the financial case is more around the project affordability, and also where is the funding going to come from. So the financial case must answer that question. Unlike at the moment where what you find is that a project owner sponsor will submit a business case, for instance, to the PPP unit at the National Treasury. But the issue around who's going to fund this program, infrastructure project or program, is not resolved. It's still going to be resolved as it moves through the different tiers in relation to that PPP. So from a five-piece module perspective, we answer that question upfront. What is that source of funding and support for the infrastructure project? And then the management case, of course, here we look more on how this project is going to be delivered practically. Does the project owner or sponsor have the requisite capacity, project teams, the skill sets essentially to deliver on the project? Because sometimes even with SOEs and funding that's already allocated for projects don't take off sometimes due to the fact that the project owner, project sponsor does not have the requisite capacity to roll out the project. So with the five case model and the work that we do, we're able to demonstrate, assess and validate the capacity of this project sponsor to deliver on that infrastructure project. So if we go to the next slide. The next slide here, Chair, Honorable Chair, we attempted to map the fit and the five case model alignment because there are areas where, yes, there are similarities, there are areas where there is usage of terminology that is the same. Suffice to say, and again, what Didi Nkosana referenced when he was presenting is that the FITPIM is an end-to-end framework for the full life cycle management of an asset, right? And it assumes that the budget has already been allocated by the National Treasury. Whereas with the five-case model, we are developing a business case for projects and programs that do not have funding allocated to them. So we want to be able to make sure that we are using a methodology that will help us to develop a quality and bankable business case, the asset life cycle planning as well. But with FITPIM, people are logging in information on the system that has been designed by the National Treasury. You know, you say that I'm going to do this, build a school, I'm going to build a police station, a post office, etc. You log in that information there. From our side, we are helping to prepare the business case to make sure that the project can raise funding, as mentioned, through the FISTAS, through blended finance mechanisms, or through debt capital market. So the diagram, how we've put it together, is that we want to show just the two methodologies that they may require similar information and documentation. However, from a five-case model perspective, there are additional requirements that must show fit-for-purpose analysis and more detailed needs analysis, commercial viability, financial case, the different options, et cetera, et cetera. And as it moves through the different stages of approvals or stage gates, the governance structures that we spoke to analyzes these different five cases within a business case. And that's where really Infrastructure South Africa comes in, and we do the heavy lifting on our side in terms of supporting project owners and sponsors to develop and provide that detailed analysis, especially on the financial case and the commercial case, we find, and the economic case as well. Too often, the need for a project is clear, so that's the strategy case. They'll say, we do need to build this asset because it will solve X, Y, Z, but then we need to go further than that and develop the relevant models that will support the funding for these projects. So from where we are sitting and through our own analysis, we believe that complying with the requirements for the five-question model is actually a lot more resource intensive, and it requires analysis of each identified option prior to whatever option that's going to be that's going to be approved finally, and therefore it's much more robust, and going through this methodology will actually help the project sponsor that was thinking about a PPP, for instance, and those project sponsors that want to submit projects to the National Treasury for the budget facility for infrastructure to meet those requirements of the National Treasury, provided that they've come through the window of ESA and that we have applied the five-case model, as it were. So from a fit-for-purpose perspective, of course, project owners can continue to follow those processes, et cetera. However, for projects that are registered with ESA that we believe are high impact, they are large scale, the project sponsors must agree that we will be applying the five-case methodology as a form of a much more heightened level of scrutiny and analysis to ensure that these projects are bankable and are viable in the long run. So if we go to the next slide. This one speaks more on the PPP analysis and where we believe the ESA's five-step methodology will add value on this. So we, of course, our analysis showed that the to register a PPP with National Treasury is not really, there's not prescribed information that is required. It moves through the different layers, TA1, TA2, et cetera. But from our side, we're saying that rather than a project owner
is everyone gone?
I was just about to ask the same thing, Shay.
just responded to Sam's message.
Nama was going to call Ushu Abe, maybe the challenges is us that are in Acacia. So we all lost her, ne?
We all lost her.
She's gone. Or maybe we are all lost. Maybe we are all lost.
We are here.
I refuse to hear that.
Professor.
Ensuring that UNIT actually undertakes...
Honorable, thank you. Prof. Ramakhopa, can you please check our presenter? In fact,
can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, we can.
I might be having the same problem of connectivity. I was about to write to say that myself.
Okay.
So I think what the we're trying to illustrate here is the project life cycles when we use the five case model, and just to the to ensure that the project meets the, if you like, the strategic intent consistent with the provision of the NIP and also the national development plan. But the point we are trying to make, without necessarily going to the entire phases of how we assess the project, is to just to illustrate, if you like, the key difference between the five case model and the triple P model. Is that the five case model is essentially a robust a tool for assessment. Like I said, you start with the early business case, and then you then move to what you call the intermediate business case, and then you get to a stage where, Honorable Chair, you have to assess, if you like, what are the best options for financing this project. One of those options could be a triple P. One of the options could be to be financed through the fiscals. The other option could be a blended financing mechanism. So the triple P assessment only starts, if you like, at the, what is the third stage of the five case model. So the triple P assessment doesn't ask the strategic question: is the project consistent with the national priorities? Is it in the right area? All it does is to assess, if you like, whether the financing options is consistent with the triple P. And we are arguing that you need to first ask the primary question: whether the project before you is the one that meets the national strategic goals. So triple P is but one of the three financing considerations that are available to finance a project. It's not the ultimate financing tool. And then in terms of the five case model, once you get to be financed, whether it's a triple P or you are financed through the fiscals or it's a blended financing mechanism, we also ask the question much later when the project is delivered, whether we have achieved what you call benefit realization. So benefit realization, Honorable Chair and members, ask the question. You said you wanted to achieve efficiency in the public transport network. You said you wanted to reduce the occurrence of fatalities or accidents. You wanted to reduce the emissions. So it's important that once the asset is delivered, they post the asset, so it could be 3 to 5 years, you go back and ask those questions. And then there are those questions that are related to the actual delivery of the asset, not the much later, not the outcomes, but when you deliver the asset, you had promised that you are going to create 5,000 jobs. You had said that you'll get the local, you'll not be importing material from other places, you'll get it locally. You had indicated that you are going to source your inputs locally. So we get to ask those questions. But when you do a triple P, it's just a financing solution and it ends there. Once the structuring is in place and the asset is delivered, it doesn't ask those questions. So we think that it is important that you also ask those questions for purposes of achieving, if you like, the national strategic goals that of growth, industrialization, or in our instance, reindustrialization, employment creation, and skills. So the triple P framework will not ask those questions. It's simply a financing solution. And then the next slide. Can we go to the next slide? Oh, so really, here is just to make the point that we acknowledge the work that we have presented and the noting of that effort. Thanks, Chair. Chair, Honourable Chair, I see that my network. I'm going to go to. We just to go to a place where there's better network. It won't take me time, but DG Dr. Mwemi is leading us with the team. It will just be 5 minutes, and I come back. Okay? Just to go to a better place. Otherwise, I'm going to inconvenience the meeting.
Thank you, Dr. Ramakgopa. The DM spoke earlier on. I will now invite honorable members to raise their comments and questions on this presentation that we have received. Honorable Graham Murray will be the first one. Honorable Heathcliff will be the second one, according to the hands that are in front of me. On that order, honorable members.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I really appreciate it. And thank you very much to the Prof and his team. And congratulations, Prof, on being bestowed with your professorship. I have huge respect for people that have attained high levels of education purely because of the work that goes into that. And I think it's amazing. So I'm glad that
to share, because I have a challenge with my network and the laptop in terms of the sharing. So if I can allow Leanne to just share for me, please.
Can you check for the lady, please?
This is from a compliance perspective, ensuring that units actually undertake...
Thank you. Prof. Ramakgopa, can you please check our presenter? In fact, she is even out of the meeting now. Or maybe ask someone to finish up presenting.
Okay.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, we can.
I might be having the same problem of connectivity. I was about to write to say that I'm trying to change location myself. I will complete the presentation myself. I think what the we're trying to illustrate here is the project life cycles when we use the 5-case model. And just to say that we've got what we call the 5 gates of interrogation. The first one is what we call the early business case. And really the point there is to ensure that the project meets the, if you like, the strategic intent consistent with the provision of the NIP and also the national development plan. But the point we are trying to make, without necessarily going to the entire phases of how we assess the project, is to just to illustrate, if you like, the key difference between the 5-case model and the triple P model, is that the 5-case model is essentially a robust a tool for assessment. Like I said, you start with the early business case, and then you then move to what we call the intermediate business case, and then you get to a stage where, Honorable Chair, you have to assess, if you like, what are the best options for financing this project. One of those options could be a triple P. One of the options could be to be financed through the fiscals. The other option could be a blended financing mechanism. So the triple P assessment only starts, if you like, at the, what is the third stage of the 5-case model. So the triple P assessment doesn't ask the strategic question: Is the project consistent with the national priorities? Is it in the right area? All it does is to assess, if you like, whether the financing options is consistent with the triple P. And we are arguing that you need to first ask the primary question, whether the project before you is the one that meets the national strategic goals. So triple P is but one of the three financing considerations that are available to finance a project. It's not the ultimate financing tool. And then in terms of the 5-case model, once you get to be financed, whether it's a triple P or you are financed through the fiscals or it's a blended financing mechanism, we also ask the question much later when the project is delivered, whether we have achieved what you call benefit realization. So benefit realization, Honorable Chair and members, ask the question. You said you wanted to achieve efficiency in the public transport network. You said you wanted to reduce the occurrence of fatalities or accidents. You wanted to reduce the emissions. So it's important that once the asset is delivered, they post the asset, so it will be 3 to 5 years, you beg and ask those questions. And then there are those questions that are related to the actual delivery of the asset, not much later, not the outcomes, but when you deliver the asset, you had promised that you are going to create 5,000 jobs. You had said that you'll get the local you'll not be importing material from other places, you'll get it locally. You had indicated that you are going to source your inputs locally. So we get to ask those questions. But when you do a triple P, it's just a financing solution and it ends there. Once the structuring is in place and the asset is delivered, it doesn't ask those questions. So we think that it is important that you also ask those questions for purposes of achieving, if you like, the national strategic goals that of growth, industrialization, or in our instance, reindustrialization, employment creation, and skills. So the triple P framework will not ask those questions. It's simply a financing solution. And then the next slide. Can we go to the next slide? Oh, So really, here is just to make the point that we acknowledge the work that we have presented and the noting of that effort. Thanks, Chair. Honourable Chair, I see that my network. I'm going to go to a place where there's better network. It won't take me time, but Dr. Mwemi is leaving us with the team. It will just be 5 minutes and I come back just to go to a better place. Otherwise, I'm going to inconvenience the meeting.
Thank you, Dr. Ramakgopa. The DM spoke earlier on. I will now invite honourable members to raise their comments and questions on this presentation that we have received. Honourable Graham Murray will be the first one. Honourable Heathcliff will be the second one, according to the hands that are in front of me. On that order, honourable members.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I really appreciate it. And thank you very much to the Prof and his team. And congratulations, Prof, on being bestowed with your professorship. I have huge respect for people that have attained high levels of education purely because of the work that goes into that. And I think it's amazing. So I'm glad that somebody like you is heading this. The problem for me is that I'm not a professor. And I just feel like that the more information we get on Easter, the less I understand about who you are and what you do. And maybe it's just me and maybe I'm just too dense to work out what is going on. But I have a few questions. I mean, the whole concept sounds fantastic. I think it's fantastic that their case study is being built and I appreciate all of the work that's gone into it. My concern is that we're adopting an international G20 scenario or policy or methodology that doesn't necessarily speak to the country that we live in and the issues that we face as a country in terms of the way projects are managed, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, the whole presentation started off with discussions around maintenance and the lack thereof, and then obviously built in the whole thing about asset life cycles and how we should be monitoring and measuring that. And again, ESA is only looking at projects that are over R1 billion. I don't think there are masses of those that are lying around, and I'm concerned that a project over R1 billion that's being presented to ESA might not necessarily be the kind of projects that need this sort of intervention. It's like if you look at housing, your very poor people benefit from government housing. Your wealthier people benefit because they can afford to buy housing. It's that middle gap market that suffers the most because they're neither too poor nor too wealthy to be able to facilitate their own housing strategies or their own housing outcomes. So I'm concerned that R1 billion project should have the skills and capabilities built within the sort of environment to look at case studies, to look at funding models, to look at all the things that you're doing on their behalf, whereas it's your middle cost projects that are probably the ones that require that level of intervention to actually get them off the ground and get them functional. But that's just my own personal opinion. One of my questions is that ESA is a coordinator, so you provide a coordinating function. Under the infrastructure inclusion into the Department of Public Works, ESA currently falls within the Department of Public Works. The prof sits on the PRCC. I mean, there's all sorts of interlinkages, et cetera. DPWI pays the cost of ESA. How does ESA generate income? In other words, you do case models, you do all these studies, you bring in all these brilliant people. I doubt anybody's working for free. I doubt the resources you are using are for free. So who's funding the cost of those? And are we recouping any income as a result? Or is this just a cost factor for the department. So is any money being generated anywhere for the, this kind of service that has been provided, and to whom is that money being paid in order to cover the costs that are being incurred in order to do this? And then I agree with one of the other things we talk a lot about are the UAMPS and the CAMPS, and I'm not sure that these are being as effective as they need to be. And I do think that maybe while ESA is looking at this sort of asset life cycle scenario, that we start looking at a better way of ensuring that maintenance is being done. You know, maintenance is always a let's see scenario in most budgets. It's never an imperative. And my concern again is that you've got a 1 billion rand project that comes along or above. What is being done to ensure that there are maintenance structures built into that project case study to ensure that, particularly where there are public partnerships, public-private partnerships, and there are pure fiscus spending, what are we doing to make sure that the money that is invested in that project is then going to see value for money going forward, because we're going to then ensure that there is proper maintenance being done on those projects? Is anything being done around that in terms of what you are currently busy with? And then, again, you spoke on slide four about the artisan skills, particularly the FET colleges. They do things like bricklaying and that. But then there's a battle with implementation. There's a battle with projects and construction companies that are not adequately upskilling and working with those people. I know Kucha Development Agency, as an example, their EPWP workers that they bring on that are being trained and upskilled, like as bricklayers, are so well managed. The department itself is not doing as good a job. But we need to be developing plumbers. We need to be developing engineering skills. We need to be developing draft people. So I agree that that is something that definitely has to be addressed going forward. Then in terms of the FASTAC model, how long does that entire process take? I mean, it's quite an intricate integrated process that requires a lot of engagement. Just as a sort of, I mean, obviously I know it differs from project to project, but have you set a time frame within which that entire process should take from the conception, from the early business case right through until the funding mechanisms are determined? I have spoken about the maintenance. I've spoken about the other projects. And then just finally, you draft these assessment reports, which is fantastic. Who receives those assessment reports? Are they revisited? Are they monitored on an ongoing process? Or does your job stop at developing, determining the funding model? And then once that's done, the case study's been done, the business case has been developed, you hand that over to whomever the implementer is, and that's the end of the process. So is ESA's thing just the sort of coordination up to funding, or does ESA then monitor the rest of the project through to finalization? And then through that process, how would we then ensure that we are monitoring that there is proper value for money being achieved for the money that's being spent on these projects? I think that's me. I hope I've made sense, because this is a very new concept, and it's very confusing how the whole ESA thing fits into everything that we're discussing. But thank you very much for the presentation today.
Thank you, Honourable Klammare, Honourable Hicklin.
Good morning, everyone. I have turned my video on. You can see that I'm here, but again, we are challenged with bandwidth in Acacia Park. I will leave my video on. If I get challenged, I will switch it off. Thank you, everyone, for the presentation. Prof, congratulations on your professorship. Like Honorable Grammaré, I am always in awe of people with learning of the standard of a professorship. But in saying that, therein comes the rub for me, because you are speaking to lay people like myself who very often don't understand precisely what you're getting to, and there we get a gap. And I think as ESA, as Infrastructure South Africa, you need to tailor your presentations so that there isn't a gap for the people who are actually listening to you. We need to make the presentations more people-friendly so that the questions that I ask and the questions that other people ask are more easily understood. It's almost as if you have to kind of dumb it down a little bit, because I want to ask questions because I don't understand to this very day, right now, having sat through this presentation and other presentations about ESA, exactly how you are going to invigorate a construction industry that is really on its knees. I think the economy in South Africa is really struggling. And when we start talking about construction projects that you are going to, or ESA is going to invigorate, that start at R1 billion, your average construction company is going to shut off completely because they are nowhere near that kind of level. And we have to be able, as the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure's Portfolio Committee, to do oversight over all the funding projects and over all the construction projects. And I think that the language used in the kind of presentation that we got today alienates your average person who is watching this program on YouTube, on Parliament Television, and that is not what we need to do. We need to actually make this more friendly to your average person in the construction industry who's looking for assistance, who's looking for hope to carry things on, and who's looking for the way in which we are going to be able to move forward as a country. We need viable construction projects, and that may not be necessarily ESA's mandate, but you need to offer South African construction companies the hope that that is exactly what ESA will do, because it's Infrastructure South Africa. So we need to make it more understandable in what we're doing. But turning actually to ESA in itself, how many projects has ESA actually facilitated? How many projects have been registered in terms of ESA South Africa, Infrastructure South Africa? How many projects do you have on your books since you came into operation in 2019? How many people have actually worked through your operations and maintenance guidelines? And sorry, I just got distracted. A message just came through on my phone. And where is the funding for these PPPs really going to come from? On slide 16, it said that the PPP was not prescribed. So how do construction companies become part of this PPP five-case model framework? What guidance? I sound confused because I am confused. I am nowhere near as clear as I should be when construction people in the construction industry come to me and say to me, how do I work with ESA, Infrastructure South Africa? I am no clearer on offering them advice than I was at the beginning of this presentation, at the end of this presentation. And it really is quite disturbing for me, because you have a massive budget from National Treasury, but it's only for exceptionally large projects. DDWI has to become the construction industry economic driver. DPWI, Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, ISA is a very big part of that. And yet I don't see the invigoration that we should be giving into the economy coming from ISA. And maybe it's because there is such a gap between ISA and our understanding of what you do. I'm going to leave it there and hope that you are able to answer some of the questions that I have posed. We need to be able to communicate better is basically what I'm saying. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Hicklin, Honorable Tring, followed by Honorable Suwisa.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, I think just because of my unstable network, I'm going to leave my video off, if that's okay. Chair, in the presentation, so firstly, thank you for the presentation and to all those who presented. It's appreciated. In the introduction of the presentations, reference was made to numerous challenges within infrastructure development, two of those being challenge with regards to an inadequate immovable asset register, as well as inadequate maintenance. So this was noted by the presenters. So what then is the involvement with ISA, the involvement of ISA and the department in this regard? We, and I know that in particular, Honorable Hicklin has made numerous appeals, including myself, with regards to Department of Public Works, in particular having an immovable asset register that one is able to utilize to effectively manage the huge property portfolio that Public Works has. So I want to just interested to know what then is ESA's involvement. Are you going to be assisting the department in terms of fast tracking the immovable asset register challenge that the department has? And then my second question, Chair, is how does ESA see themselves working with other infrastructure implementing agents like the IDT, which has thankfully just come back on board and seems to be really picking up nicely in terms of what they are able to do in terms of infrastructure development and also the mandate that they have within the department. So those would be my questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tring, Honorable Suwisa.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Chair, my first request is going to be, can we be provided with the Circular 77 of the Modern SCM? That's the first request I'm going to have, because it's going to be very difficult to be able to connect what has been said, and then we are referring to a circular that we are not aware of it. Chair, I went through all this presentation. We can have whatever model that we want. We can come up with any kind of strategy that is there. My biggest problem with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure is that there is a lack of consequence management. And I'm asking myself, if this model does not work and somebody is responsible for not allowing this model to work, what interventions are going to be made? Because there's nowhere where we are speaking about consequence management. I tried to go through it. They are talking about the infrastructure South Africa that's going to be responsible for coordination of one billion plus of projects. And yet there is nowhere where they say how they are going to deal, because we need to look into project management. They are coordinating 1 billion rands of a project. And then nowhere in the model are they talking about if the project does not go as it's supposed to go, what intervention are they going to do? Because any model or any document or any presentation that you make there needs to be ways of saying, if this happens, this is how we are going to deal with it. And so those are my problems about the model. And I would agree with the other members to say that it's very vague. If it was going to be explained in whereby you are explaining to a grade one or a grade two learner for them to understand as to what is this five, I can't even pronounce the name. What is its work actually? What were the reasons in LAME's language to say, these are the reasons. The reasons, the whole thing comes from, this is what we saw. This is what we think must happen. And if it does not happen, this is how we're going to intervene in the whole process. So we have that problem. I have a problem of consequence management. I have a problem that there are no interventions that have been put in place. So ISA is going to go forward with this model, and then they are going to coordinate whatever 1 billion rands and money of a project that is out there. And then they are going to wait for if there's a problem, and then they'll have to go back to the drawing board and come up to say, these are the problems. Because if the deputy minister, when she started, she said that if the whole thing is called Infrastructure 2050. So what's going to happen between now and 2050 if we are going to go with this model? If there's no plans of consequence management and there's no talks about project management, because we know some people are going to block projects to happen, because as Honorable Graham Murray always says, the mafias out there blocking projects, and because of certain processes were not followed, people were not involved in certain projects that are going to be done. Some way the projects are going to be stopped, and it's going to be a loss of money, and then there's going to be a rollover of projects and everything. Those are my only problems for now, Chair, and I'll listen to the responses. Maybe I'll come up with any other follow-up question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sewisa. I saw a message from Honorable Graham Murray. Honorable Graham Murray, please do ask that question. I thought it was going to be a follow-up, but do ask that question so that I can also raise my own points.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I knew I'd forgotten something that I was supposed to ask. Yes, my question is that all indicators are that the rebuilding of Parliament is going to cost in excess of 1 billion rand. News reports in the last week have indicated that National Treasury basically doesn't trust the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure to handle the rebuild. And the indicators are that they are looking at giving the money directly to Parliament for the reconstruction process. Given that this falls within the financial ceiling that, or financial area that ESA deals with, I just wanted to know whether or not ESA is going to be providing a business case and looking at funding models for the rebuild of Parliament. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Graham Murray. Let me also add my voice, GM, Prof. Ramakgopa and the team, in appreciating the presentation that was made to us, though it was a bit of high level, as Honorable Hicklin is saying to us, a lay person. Just a few questions on my side. Oh, let me appreciate the fact that you are talking about the fact that ISA will assess the value for money achieved through the infrastructure project. That one, is, I think it's a green light, and it's a beacon of hope in all the challenges that we are facing. My first question, the time for this. Remember, one of the reasons we asked you to come and present to us is because we are concerned with service. Looking at all the stages that have to be followed, if you talk about the 5K model, what time are we looking at? Is that, in fact, the stages as before you go to the project itself, Prof, are we talking about years? Are we talking about months? Remember, one of the challenges that is facing South Africa is that a project that is supposed to take 3 months, it takes 3 years. So now you also have stages before the final implementation of the project. So what exactly are we talking about? I'm seriously concerned about that. We're saying there must be projects that are done, and you also gave us a list of projects that you are following. I remember you gave us, though we have not checked how far are you with those projects. So the time that you're talking about in the phases, first phase, how many months, how many days? Second phase, that is the first question. The second question is, you have also talked about the what FIPDM, Framework for Infrastructure Procurement and Delivery Management. How is this going to prevent corruption? One of the challenges that we have, in fact, is the issue that our projects don't take the time that they are supposed to do, let's say 3 months for a road, but it takes 3 years. It's because of the corruption practices. So this framework, how is that going to ensure that we prevent corruption and we deliver services to the people of South Africa? Three, how does this framework work? Are all the project management that you have, project managers or project management teams that you have in the directorate, will be following this? Will they be doing assessment? Look, now you are saying you want to do assessment to check whether value for money has been achieved. So, which means before you sign off the payment, these projects are going to be, this due diligence will be done. So my question is, are your project management teams aware of this, or will they be doing it before they sign off maybe a certificate that is coming for a payment? Thank you so much for this. Lastly, the issue of the PPP. I think we all know that it has been raised previously that the regulations for PPP, they need to be amended. So how far are we reviewing the PPP regulations? Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Apology, DM. I didn't see the hand of Honorable Van Stalweg. Honorable Van Stalweg, over to you. Sorry, my Chairperson? Member. Yes.
May I proceed, Chair?
Yes, please proceed, Honorable Van Stalweg.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the Honorable Chairperson, members, and DM, and our support staff. Allow me to just greet and then mute my video. Chairperson, I'm appreciating the report that has been presented to us, and I just need to know, I'm not going to venture into the areas that already been raised, but I want to know, Chairperson, what is the effect that ISA, what effect does ISA and this model have that he presented to us have on the first instance, and does ISA have a solid enough impact on the social infrastructure projects like your courts, your police stations, etc.? And can we make the assumption that having ISA inside the department has an impact on achieving excellence in, for instance, construction project management in the PMTD? Then also, Chairperson, I need to know what ISA is supposed to do with our main concern regarding maintenance of the property portfolio, NIMS, and them exist to develop and guide the maintenance industry. Can we request a report, Chairperson, also that maps and unpacks the key pillars and components of what is called the maintenance industry? We've also seen, Chairperson, that there is some kind of a review of NIMS underway to ensure proper implementation. So I want to know what is the timeline also in terms of this review of NIM. Then, Chairperson, it's a point of concern for me continuously, as we know that research indeed confirmed that it is more cost-effective to provide planned maintenance for an asset instead of waiting for the deterioration of the building and the equipment. And properties which do not comply with legislation, regulation may result in government being faced with litigation by the community and also the people occupying those buildings, because it may be hazardous and accidents may occur. Can we get an indication, therefore, of what their plans are in terms of ensuring that indeed a planned maintenance is prioritized against the issue of emergency maintenance or unplanned maintenance? Thank you, Chairperson, I'm for stage.
Thank you, Honorable Van Schalkwyk. Let's also acknowledge the presence of Minister Jalil, who has just joined us in the meeting. You are welcome, Minister. Over to you.
Chair, my apologies, Chair. If I there's just one or two other questions that I'd
I thought it's the liquor we had.
No, I've been putting it up and so that you would
you are
would
known
see
for
it.
The liquor we had. Okay, let me allow you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just quickly two questions. When I was in council, I raised the issue, for example, of the increase in water demand with the concurrent lack of supply, particularly in South Africa. So with South Africa being known as a water scarce country. Mm-hmm. So the simple question is the building of dams, desalination plants and so on in South Africa, noting that we are a water scarce country, is that a part of ISA's long-term project? And similarly, with regards to the unbundling of Eskom and the developing of different reticulation infrastructure projects throughout the country, would ISA also see themselves, is ISA going to be involved in that kind of infrastructure development in the country? And then lastly, Chair, Treasury, in a previous meeting that I was in with Treasury, they raised concerns with regards to budget overruns in many of the projects. And so what systems would ISA see as putting in place to ensure that we don't have budget overruns? You know, where a project that is 1 billion rand, you know, doesn't become 50 billion. We've seen this in the tourism sector out in Limpopo, a 6 million project. Is now looking at 50 million rand. So what systems in place to prevent budget overruns as well with the projects? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tring. Over to you, Minister DM and your team.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And let me also acknowledge Minister this time around. And as a norm, honorable members from my side. I normally allow all officials to respond to the questions, come back after they have responded to deal with those political ones. And then given that now Minister is with us, I will, with your permission, Chair, also give her the opportunity as the lead and the leader in the department to be to have the last say, understanding that she would not have been exposed to the earlier questions and discussions. And therefore, allow me to give over first to Dr. Muemi, and of course, with Prof, if he has been able to join us, he will be after Dr. Muemi. Given that most of the questions relate to the linkages, as I listen to the nature and the scope of questions from the honourable members, to say what would be the linkages in terms of what NIMS provide together with the linkages with the five case methodology. So I would ask Dr. Muemi, and then if Prof has joined us, he would be next, and if not, and then I will allow Mamitsi to respond to those technical ones, and Kosana, and then I will come back to round the political ones, and then hand over to Minister. With your permission, I'm proposing that approach, Honourable Chair. Dr. Muemi?
Thank you very much, DM, and good morning to the Honourable Minister. Chairperson, with your permission, I would request that in order to have a better bandwidth, that I do not switch on the camera. There is load shedding here, and it's a challenge to keep up. Let me acknowledge the chair as well as the members of the committee, and welcome the questions that have been put forth to the team in terms of the concerns that have been raised. Maybe the first real start would be to start where we should have started with the question raised by Honorable Van Schalkwyk as to what exactly is the problem we're trying to solve with this model. Now, the true measure of any project management success is whether a project is achievable and the desired results and outcomes that were set in advance are actually achieved, but even more important, that they are achieved on time and that they are achieved within budget, with these two measures being the two measures that are glaringly lacking in the South African construction landscape, particularly within the public sector. And therefore, correctly, as members have pointed out, this is one of the maladies of the system we are trying to address with the five-case model that we are seeking to roll out and to implement across large-scale construction projects and infrastructure projects within the government pipeline. Of import as well is that previously we have had a number of projects that have been in stream, but as you may know, many of them have remained incomplete and they have not necessarily gone to their logical conclusion. And part of the systemic failures are around issues related to planning, and even more or less the unanticipated delays and rise in costs, which then become prohibitive and make sure that the projects come to a screeching halt and that they are not caught. With the five-case model, we seek to respond to that by introducing a number of gateways for project approval processes and for conceptualization of projects. And we have also been asked, what then does ESA add as value to all of this maladies and to what we are saying? The truth be told is that the capacity of the state to harness and to bring the necessary synergies across the different role players within the public sector, whether be they the entities that do large-scale programs, whether be the sector departments, whether be the regulatory entities, whether be the different spheres of government with different authorities and different power to authorize planning, development, infrastructure rollout, etc., that those be at province or even at local government, that a credible pipeline of projects that are bankable has not necessarily been realized by the state since 1994 until we have the infrastructure mandate clarified and until ESA has been brought into being with the possibility of it driving and harnessing that and bringing all those synergies together. So all the ingredients for a successful program exist at different spheres and exist at different authorities as well as entities. And indeed, the kitchen is available to cook a nice stew for this. But what we have not been having is a proper chef. And I think with that analogy, ESA comes with his skill set as a chef to look at all the ingredients that are here, to look at what to put in first and at what stage. And with it, it comes armed with a recipe. And that recipe is the five-case model, which looks at what to do first, at what stage, and with different stages, thereby bringing along a credible pipeline of this project and subjecting all of these projects that have been to pre-feasibility study, bringing them through this model to test them, to stress test them, to ensure that by the time we invest significant amounts of money, number one, that these projects have been prepared thoroughly to a stage of bankability. And therefore, project preparation is one of the important value adds that has been a missing piece in the puzzle of infrastructure rollout in our republic that ESA brings to the fore and to the party. And ESA harnesses all of the skill sets as well as expertise, including those from the private sector, in bringing together into stream project preparation and into bringing together that the projects reach the area of bankability so that at any time, whoever is the project sponsor takes the application to, say, for instance, the National Treasury through the budget facility for infrastructure, that we are almost semi-guaranteed that that project would pass and that it will receive funding. And it does not end there. ESA then has to monitor all of that. We have been asked whether it simply just does the studies and then shelve them, not necessarily. When those studies have been done and the credibility of the project has been brought beyond doubt and that that project has been brought to bankability and financing has been provided as such, therein lies the follow-up work ESA has got to undertake. And in doing so, ESA does its work by working with project sponsors, providing them with the necessary and requisite capacity, and supporting the project sponsors to bring the projects into fruition, into the construction phase. And in this case, ESA also provides support and mobilizes expertise to support the project sponsors in various other. As you may have seen the framework, it also provides for large-scale procurement for complex projects, and it seeks to bridge the gap that has been existing now. And this gap, we have been paying for it heavily with project delays and project penalties. And if the model is implemented to the latter, and ESA does what is required to do in terms of this model, then we would see better procurement, better conditions of contracting, and therefore better outcomes in terms of project management, of ensuring that the contractors do deliver according to the true measurements of a successfully managed project, being the delivery of the intended project within time and within budget. So that's the big value add and the bridge that ESA brings to the party. ESA was never designed to be a project implementer itself. However, we are hearing what Honorable Graham Murray raises, and we can assure Honorable Graham Murray that there are new green shoots that we are seeing in this regard. And we have, for the first time, allocated to ESA the ROT program as well as CIP28, where ESA now plays a role of a catalyst and, importantly, as an implementing agent on behalf of the department. This is the first time since the establishment of ESA that we are also pushing them towards that mandate and to also fill a vacuum that is identified within the PMTE and the challenge of capacity within the PMTE. And indeed, the questions raised by Honorable Van Schalkwyk as to whether we would see a better improvement in this regard. Yes, gradually as ESA rolls out and as its impact happens, we would more and more strengthen the implementation mandate. And to that extent, we would see more and more of some of the major projects the PMT must drive being supported by ESA in this regard, while the PMT restructuring takes root as a permanent solution. Now, I must say that the interface of ESA and ESA accountability, clearly it has been proclaimed and gazetted as part of the National Macro Organization of Government that ESA, with its infrastructure mandate, belongs to the Department of Public Works. That's where its primary funding for administration comes from. And that's where they are accountable to the Minister of responsible for infrastructure, being Minister Dilil. And accordingly, they also prepare for the Ministerial Infrastructure Development Committee, which sits regularly and sits to consider the gazetted pipeline of strategic infrastructure projects. And ESA is supposed to act as a key player in presenting reports of its own monitoring the extent of where these projects are right across the entire public sector system. And even better, ESA is also attached as a secretariat now to the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee, where Minister Dilil is expected to lead and to present reports to the President and to colleagues within Cabinet to check the progress of the commitments made on the infrastructure pipeline and to look at its implementation in the overall. So therein lies hand in glove the role of ESA as a coordinator, the chef, as I've indicated, and what it then does. So is the system perfect? No, we do not have a readily made template. We have been looking at different options, but we have now feeling comfort that we should adopt the 5-case model. We are adopting a model, as Honorable Graham Murray says, is a foreign model. But yes, but we see that it is a proven model, that it is a model that has been stress tested under different conditions and not just in the developed world, but where the British government has supported, even in the developing world, countries to successfully implement and roll out this model. We do believe that with customization here and there, and indeed there has been discussions and workshops to customize it to our local situation, considering our edifice of our laws, and to also look at the practicality of implementation, considering our capacity constraints across the different spheres, and particularly with the project sponsors. And you would see that in some gateways, we're making amends for that to bring in the requisite capacity to support as part of those stages of the five-case model. So therefore, we do believe that we can customize the model to our situation and to suit what we are doing and to have the requisite impact in this regard. I will pause there, DM. I will leave the rest of the questions to Nkosana and Manese to deal with, and we can then hand back over to the DM and the Minister. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG.
Okay.
Can I go on? DG Nkosana?
Proceed, DG Masimula.
All right. Thanks, DG, and thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. So I will touch on some of the questions on that have been asked, because DG has covered quite a significant number of those. So Honourable Graham Murray is asking the question why we deal with projects that are of 1 billion rand and above for now. And it's because from where we are sitting, Honourable Member, is that to be able to close the current infrastructure investment gap, right? So the gap between the infrastructure that's required now and that which will require by 2030 or 2050, and looking at the fiscal envelope, so the budget allocations that may possibly be made by the National Treasury, which we know every year it's shrinking, that infrastructure investment gap, to close that and be able to meet the targets that have been set in the National Development Plan insofar as infrastructure is concerned, we need to bring to the market 16 to 20 major projects the size of Boho Bi-Port development, the dams, the Lesotho Highlands scheme, water scheme, phase two. You know, these are projects of 10 to 14 billion rand every single year, just in addition to the normal ones of building schools and ensuring that there is other social infrastructure that is being rolled out. But every single year, that's what we need to be bringing into market as part, again, of reviving and rebuilding the construction industry. So we must be able to utilize the resources that we have at the moment to really close that infrastructure investment gap as much as we possibly can, and to invest, as DG says, in the preparation and packaging of these major infrastructure projects or programs, because again, it can be maybe the schools that we'll be looking at in the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape as pilot phases. Collectively, it's more than 4,000 schools that are required to be built in the next coming years to address the, you know, the backlogs in schools infrastructure delivery. So these are massive infrastructure programs of government, and we need to be bringing those into the market, 16 to 20 of those every single year. And the question is asked again around who pays for these costs, because ESA is a program of the DPWI, and there is a lot of technical support, significant amount of technical support that's been provided to project owners and sponsors, the heavy lifting that we've spoken to. And no, at the moment, we do not charge a fee. So the resources that we have and the budget, the 148 million rand budget that we have each year, and that includes for both goods and services as well as cost of employment, that's the budget we have. Hence, we are working very closely with multilateral development banks, your development finance institutions, private sector, professionals that are seconded to ESA, paid for by the private sector, to work with ESA in developing these business cases. So for now, we do not charge a fee, not at all, is the resources that we have at the moment to help progress and graduate these infrastructure projects or the business cases such that funding decisions are made. How long does it take for in terms of the five-case model? What are the time frames, etc.? And the answer is it depends. It depends on the sector. It depends on the complexity of the project. It depends on the size of the project from a project value perspective. So the requirement on our side is that when the project gets to be registered with ESA, we will work with the project owner and deliver on the early business case. So the early business case is both the scoping exercises as well as conclusion of the pre-feasibility reports. That must be done within 6 months or less. So that is the requirement. And then when we move into the bankability phase and moving into financial close, that's where all of these things are dependent on the complexity, the size, et cetera, and so on and so forth of these projects, because that's where we do the actual financial structuring of these projects, such that when they get to the National Treasury for fiscal funding, you know, they are well prepared and packaged, or they are handed over to the infrastructure fund. The infrastructure fund can immediately go into market with those projects and leverage private sector financing, etc. So the bankability phase and financial close, that's the intermediate business case phase of this project. That can take anything between 6 to 12 months to conclude or less, depending, as I said, on these other variables. However, we work very hard and work very closely with the project owners to make sure that we really apply maximum effort and bring in the skill sets that are required to progress those projects or progress the business cases, as it were. Dr. Hubert joined this year, the program manager and the head of the Infrastructure South Africa Center of Excellence. I think he's going to be talking more on the issues around infrastructure delivery, value for money assessments, benefit realization, and all of that. So he will speak to that. On Honorable Hickling, we take note and we take counsel and the guidance that's provided around making the presentations to be perhaps less technically focused and more readable and understandable, so that even a person that's not sitting in this meeting and goes through it can understand it better. I think we take guidance in terms of that, and we will do better in relation to the other presentations that may be coming through to the portfolio committee. There is something, there's the Infrastructure and Project Authority in the UK. So we had a knowledge exchange program with them about 3 weeks ago. There is a very nice document that they publish every year, and it's called the Construction Pipeline. So that report is forward-looking. What it does is they publish all the infrastructure projects and programs where funding decisions have been made and procurement will be taking place in that particular financial year, and they publish that. We found that it's maybe quite a very useful tool of engaging directly with, you know, construction companies, the construction industry, and helping them to gear themselves up to taking advantage of these projects that will be going online, coming onto the market, and there'll be, you know, procurement events taking place and so on. And it details you know, the timelines, etc. We found that it's something quite useful, and we're working internally. And we'll be, you know, engaging with several stakeholders internally in the department, including CIDB and so on, to work on perhaps having such a report that's, you know, that will signal to the market that this is the construction pipeline. So not a project pipeline, but the construction pipeline. So those projects that are coming online and coming on stream on an annual basis. We found that from the UK government perspective, that can be something that can be very useful as part of engaging the construction sector and reinvigorating the sector, as it were. We will provide the information that has been asked around the projects. How many projects have we facilitated? How many are registered? Etc. I think we'll just because it's quite a long list. We'll provide that information and structure it such that it shows you the where the projects are, the geographic location, the size of the project, the stage of this project, etc. And then provide that information to the committee. And then the other issues raised by Honourable Maxim String is on the whether projects, the desalination projects, the water infrastructure projects, the energy projects are part of the pipeline of ESA, and the answer is yes. Actually, there are two projects in the Eastern Cape on desalination, and they form part of the ESA project pipeline. We work the pipeline development team. They have standing project steering committee meetings with ESCOM in particular. Every second week, those meetings take place to look at the ESCOM pipeline as it comes through. And we're beginning to see now the fruits of that particular setup. A significant number of energy projects from ESCOM itself being registered with ESA. So yes, we do deal with the energy ESCOM projects as well as the water infrastructure projects in totality. They form part of the ESA pipeline, and that information will also be made available to members if it's it's been required, we'll make sure that that gets to be submitted through to the committee. And I hand over now to Dr. Joint on the assessment issues and related aspects. Thanks.
Thank you, DGG. Good morning, Chair, Minister, DM, and members. Thanks for the questions. I think very pertinent questions, very relevant. Just in terms of the technical evaluation, we also need to ensure that the standard for evaluation, but also for project submissions, is at the appropriate level. And I'm just going to put it into numbers why this stringent evaluation and detailed evaluation is required. If you look at the current underspending of allocated public sector infrastructure funds, we sit between 42 billion to about 90 billion rand per annum of unspent infrastructure funding. Now, that tells you quite a number of things, that the proper management case was not in place to deliver the project. That's why we have five cases. It includes the management case, which focuses on delivery and monitoring of projects. But it also tells you that probably the proper project has the wrong project has been finalized, because they have not done all the different business cases to ensure smooth delivery of a project. So we need to reverse that situation, because if you look at it, public sector infrastructure funding allocation is around 200 to 250 billion per year. And if you underspend by 42 billion or up to 80, 90 billion, it's a significant portion of allocated money that's not being spent on project delivery. So at the Center of Excellence, we also acquired specific macroeconomic models, and apologies, members, I'm going into a bit of detail because I think it's important to ensure that, you know, the standard, but also the appropriate economic information is used. So we have specific macro models for the different provinces. The problem is what's happened in the past is many of the submissions make use of a national model, and then the national model is not always relevant to a specific province. For instance, a rural province like Limpopo or Eastern Cape, the economic multipliers differ from the national model. So that's why we differentiated and disaggregated into having specific purpose-built provincial models to ensure that there's improved accuracy. We've also, together with National Treasury, standardized specific inputs into the project evaluation. For instance, I'm again going to a bit of detail. Your discount rate that impacts your net present values and your returns on a project, in the past there were no standard. Now it's you know, standardized at 10%. So at least when you get different projects from, you know, from water, transport, at least all of them use the same discount rate, so you can then also now compare intersectoral projects. Now, my team has also assisted, you know, this year we supported 10 different project sponsors to do the cost-benefit studies and also to do the macroeconomic studies for submissions into the budget facility for infrastructure to ensure that we start helping those organizations that do not always have the technical know-how. And yes, we have also assisted on a specific desalination plant. So again, I would just like to re-emphasize that, you know, in terms of a national infrastructure plan, water, energy, freight, transport, and ICT are the main focal areas, although the next phase focuses on distributed and municipal infrastructure, but it's very important to take note of that. I also just want to respond to the question on terms of the recovery in terms of the construction sector. My colleagues at Public Works, they can give more detail, but the construction industry recovery plan is currently being formulated. ISA's providing inputs to that, so there's already a plan in action to ensure the recovery of the construction sector. And then, yeah, I think I've covered. I just want to go back to the importance of a management case. Honorable Sir Wisa also referred to the issue of a lack of consequence management. And the good thing about the management case, it's purpose built around the project. So it includes risk management. It includes processes to deal with non-delivery. So the issue of consequence management can definitely be built into the management case to ensure that delivery takes place the way it should be take place. I think that's about it from my side. Chair, I'm going to hand over to my colleague at DPWI to... Thank you.
Okay. thanks, Dr. Joint. And also, let me recognize the presence of the Minister. Honorable Chair, with regard to some of the questions raised with regard to maintenance, I can indicate to the committee that in alignment with the NIMS and the NIAM framework, DDG Lombard in the Facilities Management Branch has started the process of reviewing our own maintenance policy and strategy. We have been supported by ministry in this regard, and very soon we'll be finalizing on that approach. We can then share the report at a later stage with the committee. But key to the strategy is around ensuring that within our maintenance budget, 70% up to 80% of our budget is geared towards preventative maintenance, and anything from 20 to 30% will be focusing on reactive maintenance. And this is what the DDG Lombard and his team are currently are doing. And what we have done as part of aligning IDMS and the standard operating procedures, we have already finalized a draft circular, which the implementation will be 1 April 2023. That circular aligns the FEEDPIM, the processes that we have spoken to earlier. But what we are also considering, as what Dr. Joint has indicated, and what Prof. and Mames said, there is a need to also put our own project managers through this particular training of the 5 case models, because as part of the project planning and the feasibility, there's a need on the management case to have a proper and anchoring a project towards making sure that the basics of planning and the requisite skill set is infused within that management case. So that is a work in progress, members. I want also to, on the point that Honorable Graham raised, as part of the new standard operating procedures, we are working with the planning unit to review our user asset management plans and the custodian asset management plan, so that they just not become a compliance document, but are documents that are intended to be used for planning and for budgeting purposes. And we are at an advanced stage in ensuring that even our user departments, they don't just submit the UM for compliance, but they submit proper research and proper captured UM, which is meaningful, and that will add value. And what we have also done is to ensure that, and we can bring to members a report on some of the artisans that we have put through our pipeline projects, and some of the engineers we have now have developed an in-house engineering capacity on some of the infrastructure projects. So we can maybe also provide a report to the committee in terms of our artisan program, as well as our engineering capability that we have started to make sure that we have our own timber in this instance. So I just wanted to add on those issues. So the capacity of our project managers to be able also to utilize this 5-case model is something that we are also considering. And we will provide the Honorable Sewisa the circular that you had requested for. What Honorable Tring raised, and as part of what DDG Masimula and Prof reported, as part of your risk mitigation on the management case, you need to make sure that you mitigate against a budget overrun. So that will be linked to consequence management, because if all the issues upfront have been finalized and agreed to in terms of the deliverables, it's important that project managers then, in line with contract management, they know the consequences of a project overrun, and this is something that will be infused as part of the training. The one part that Honorable Van Schalkwyk raised, and which Minister is also championing, is the area of social facilitation. After the approval of the framework by Cabinet, we have worked with ISA and the technical advisory panels to develop templates and tools which will be rolled out throughout the infrastructure spheres of government. We have since presented that to our technical MINMEC. There's a work stream that is finalizing all the inputs from the provinces. We are within the next month or two, we'll be circulating those social facilitation templates, because they make sure that from the planning, communities take ownership of the projects right from planning, and we have linked this social facilitation with the district development model so that we talk of the one plan per district or local municipality. So our social facilitation framework will also be rolled out very soon. Minister is championing and piloting elements of that social facilitation through the SalvaCorp project, where we are building headquarters of five departments as part of the precinct development. So these are some of the initiatives that I've enhanced and are harnessing the strategies towards making sure that we align all these challenges and implementing the interventions that are required. I think DG has covered the number of the areas that members raised, and like DG Masemula raised, we take note that the presentation should be less technical for the audience and even for the public, and we take advice in that regard. Thanks, Honorable Chair and DG and DM. I'll hand over back to you.
Thank you, DG Kosana, and thanks to Acting DG and his team. I think we have covered. They have managed to cover a lot of our the questions from the members of our committee. And therefore, mine is more to round up. There's one question I will leave for Minister, which has not been covered. But my general comments and my input to the responses already offered, with respect to the first question about us adopting a G20 approved methodology when our problems are in the manner they are. I think we must also contextualize properly our environment, because most of this, the analytic high range of skills, we don't have as a country, and that has contributed to us finding ourselves in the quagmire in the infrastructure space, where projects are not finished on time, overruns, and all that, and that has its own genesis, which we tend to shy away from, and we tend to turn a blind eye on. But when we talk with our councils about skills development, about transformation in the industry, those are the essence of the skills that we need. And for us, we can't behave as if we still live in the enclosed South Africa. We live in the South Africa, which is part of the globe. And therefore, we must be able to move with the rest of the people of the globe. Because if we don't do so, we will run the risk of remaining on the lowest levels of development in the country. And for me, what ISA is doing, taking a number of our people, our personnel, to be trained for managing this program, talks to further skills development. And it talks to us ensuring that those skills that we do not have, we build. It talks to us building our own timber. Yes, we may be utilizing the seeds of other countries, but the essence is that we need to have those skills and we need to up our game so as to be able to compete in our own human capital. We must be able to produce these people that are able to compete internationally. So I would make the plea to honorable members to say probably that's one program we must ensure we support this training of our own people, training in the 5K program. So for me, we it's something we need. But also, we with ISA, maybe one way to simplify the kind of confusion that members have referred to. Let us look at ISA as our own, as governments, what would have called the consultants, the high-end range of consultants that would be analyzing and therefore that would be innovative in their approach in looking and analyzing projects that come through to ensure success opportunities. And therefore, for me, let's simplify ISA as internal consultants in government so that we understand, we are able to understand their role, because their role is more to guide, to advise, to assist, to support various project sponsors of government to be able to ensure that those projects they are planning and execution is in line with the international standards. We are able to also compete at that level. And therefore, they would bring, they are bringing into government the high-end skills that are necessary for huge projects that impact the economy, impact the social standing of our country. And therefore, those would be my comments, Honorable Chair, to say let's look at this. Let's try and simplify it in that fashion. But I do take the note and the comment. Maybe we also must do this, must ensure that the what we bring to honorable members is that which they can easily relate to and which they can easily understand. And I take that note as well. We probably need, now, those who oversee to ensure that the what we produce for Parliament is that which is produced for Mr. and Mrs. Public out there. As I have said, the one of Parliament, I will leave to Minister. Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's now upward delegation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable DM and Acting DG for holding the fort. And thank you to the chairperson for excusing me to attend the cabinet committee. I had to present the IDT business case today. So thank you very much for that. I did not see the comments from National Treasury with reference to the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. But what I can comment on, Honorable Chairperson, is that on the 9th of September, when we presented the phase two plans from Puka Development to the Joint Finance Monitoring Committee of Parliament, it was agreed in that committee that a troika be established consisting of a technical troika, consisting of the Secretary to Parliament and then also representatives from National Treasury and from DPWI. What is still outstanding is that that technical committee must report back to the Joint Finance Management Committee, and then we will get guidance from the Joint Committee as to the way forward. For now, as far as I know, officially, that is the position. And as the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, we will hear the views of the members of Parliament. After all, we have agreed that Parliament will finally make the final decision. And I just want to put it on record, I think it's completely, if it's true, those comments, and I would like to see them if Honorable Graham Marais can provide that to me, but it's uncalled for to cast aspersions on DPWI. Yes, there are many things wrong, make no mistake, but I think that we need to deal with these things within the structures of government, which is in Parliament, where Parliament has summoned us all together. So I will certainly follow that up, but we will wait for the speaker to convene this meeting so that the technical troika can report back to Parliament. I thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, GM, and all the members of your team in responding to comments and questions that have been raised by the members. We will still engage, even if it's true, return questions, if there are any issues that we feel that they are related to the topic of today and would like further explanations on them. But we really appreciate that there is a plan. As I indicated earlier, our ultimate goal as the portfolio committee is to ensure that services are delivered to the people of South Africa. And the reality is that we have a serious backlog of infrastructure development in our country. All the best in your quest in seeking in finances to ensure that those projects are delivered. And the model as it is presented to us, it is promising, but we will see when it is happening. Honorable members, we are supposed to deal with minutes, but for the fact that we still have to travel to the city of Cape Town using bus and all that, I will defer the minutes to our next meeting so that we all go and ensure that we prepare for the sitting this afternoon. Thank you so much. Thank you, Minister and your team. Thank you, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Long live the chair.